This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Hello, everyone in the U.S. and around the world, and thanks for joining us today on today's show, which interviews baseball's best coaching minds who love to challenge the status quo. And yes, I am your host, Pete Caliendo. Today's show is dedicated to our great friend, the godfather of mental training, Ken Rizza. Rest in peace, my friend. I know you're listening. Our next guest today, Brian Kane. He's a great friend of Ken Rizza and a student, has taken off as today's guy that everybody goes to for mental training when it comes to all sports. He's the creator of the Mental Performance Mastery Coaching Certification, which is MPM. I see it all over Twitter. So many students coming out of that. Number one, international best-selling author, speaker, and consultant. And listen, the best way to describe this guy is energetic, empowering, engaging, and one that separates himself from the competition by providing a system. That's what I love about this, not a speech. It's a system. It's a proven system. And on top of it, he's an avid Ironman triathlete and a 100-mile ultra marathoner. Brian practices what he preaches. Let me tell you, he is the best in the business nowadays. Welcome to the show, Brian Kane. What's up, buddy?
Oh, Peter, thank you for having me, man. That's one of the best intros I think I've ever heard. So I may have to record that and use that as my alarm clock in the morning. And just so you know, my friend Ken Rizza, I got his face tattooed on my heart here. I'll give you a quick little pic. When he passed away, I got his face tattooed there.
So that's dedication.
Yeah, that's how much he means to me. So I appreciate you having me. I'm just happy to carry the torch.
Are you kidding? Unbelievable. It's, you know, I've been trying for a long time. You got, like you said, you're doing 8 to 10 hours of shows every day. You're so well known around, not just in the U.S., but around the world. And I see your the program on Twitter. Everybody's taking your course. Can't thank you, because you're doing me a great favor. And to talk to the coaches about, you know, developing the mental game and how to actually apply that mental game. But before I do, here's what I want to ask you. And I don't know if this makes any sense, but I just something at the top of my head that I wanted to know. When it comes to the mental game and coaching, which is the toughest sport? Because I know you've interviewed guys with the MMA and also the UFC. But which is the toughest sports when it comes to the mental game?
Difficult question to answer. I think impossible question to answer, because the application is different, right? So the mixed martial arts mental game is, you know, you're coming out of a cage with another guy who's as bad a dude as you are, and you're probably coming out of there with some broken bones, and you could get knocked out in front of millions of people on TV. And when you step in the cage, if you win, you get twice the purse as you do if you lose. So I've had a chance to work with 5 UFC world champions, the who's who of MMA, including a guy named George St. Pierre, and they all have self-doubt. They all have insecurity. They all have that kind of red light mentality that can happen before a fight. And typically when I get started with guys in MMA, they've lost a fight before it starts. So when you're looking at that sport, it's a different type of mental game than golf, where you're out there for 6 hours, you execute a skill for maybe 30 minutes of the 6 hours, the rest of the time you're walking around and you can get kind of lost in your own head. Then you take baseball, which is another 162 games in like 180 days, and it's the constant grind, and there's so much failure, and it's all different mental games from MMA to golf to baseball. So I think they're all very mental. So I don't think I could say there's one that is mental, but I know you got a big baseball following, and I would say that baseball is one of, if not the most mentally challenging games that there is, because you have so little things that you can control. There's so much adversity, and it's such a long game.
Yes,
I mean, you're getting there at 4 o'clock in the afternoon for a college game that starts at 7:05. You're not getting out of there until after probably 10:30, 11 o'clock, and you rinse and repeat that 162 times at the major league level. If you're the worst team, you get to play more if you're better, right? And then in the college game, you're doing it 56 times in what, maybe 80, maybe 100 days or so. So the baseball grind is for real.
Yeah, and to stay focused for that 3 hours, 4 hours can't be easy. Now, I want to talk about the coaches, but if I'm a player, I'm a player. Pete Caliendo wants to play, and I want to make myself a better baseball player. Is there a sport that, if I play that sport, like you mentioned golf, or I play another sport that deals with the mental game that's going to help me in baseball, would there be one that would help me out?
I mean, I think a lot of them would, right? I think there's going to be, as a guy who in high school in Massachusetts played football, played basketball, played baseball, I think there was a lot of mindsets that I took from those different sports that helped me succeed as a baseball player. So I think from a mental game standpoint, you can draw from a lot of different sports. I think if there was one, I would say probably now that I've started to play, I would say golf, simply because the golf mentality is in control in the present moment. And you have to be in control of yourself before you can control your performance. As a high school football quarterback, in a center in basketball, if you believe it, I was a 6'1" center. It was like being the best snowboarder in Mexico, right? Bad high school. And, you know, but with taking that football mentality and bringing it to baseball hurt me more than it helped me. Because in baseball, you know, I hear coaches say all the time, like, if you give max effort, you're not as good as if you pitch with 95% effort. Mm-hmm. And I was never able to do that. Where in golf, it's the same thing. Like if you try to hit a golf ball 100%, it's not going to go as well as you do if you give it 80%. So sometimes less is more. And the more I do this, I think that there's components of MMA, components of football mindset that help you in baseball. But I think the golf mindset and training may help you the most. And I think that's why you see so many pitchers, especially at the major league level, that are also such great golfers, like, you know, Greg Maddux being one that comes to mind, is he probably could have played on the PGA Tour.
Absolutely. I love what you say. And here's the part that intrigues me a little bit when it comes to the mental game. You're talking about coaches, you know, the application part, because it's different for every individual. Possibly it's different for every sport. So if I'm a coach and I need to apply the mental game, where do I start?
I think you start with yourself. I always say that the mental game is caught more than it's taught. So if you're a coach who's preaching process but not living process, then your players are going to, that's actually probably going to hurt you more than it helps you, because your players are going to say, wait a minute, you're saying one thing, doing something else. And I think that's why, Peter, I got into the Ironman. It's why I got into running 100 miles, is I wanted to walk the walk. There's enough people out there talking the talk, telling you what to do, but not being the living example. And I wasn't going to be that guy. And I had a mentor. I've had two mentors in my life that I would say have had the most impact. Ken Rabizza, who we've talked about, and my advisor at the University of Vermont, where I was an undergrad phys ed major, Dr. Declan Connolly, who, rest in peace, we lost in February of 2020. Mm-hmm. And I remember he said to me one time when I was 240 pounds and he came up to speak at our school where I was an AD and we went for a bike ride and I couldn't make it 3 miles with him. And he pulled over and he said, he had this Irish accent. He said, Mr. Kane, you want to be this mental performance coach? You want to go work with these professional teams and these athletes? He goes, you can't even ride your bike 3 miles. He goes, look at you, you're 240 pounds. He goes, leaders have great energy. The line he said was, leaders aren't fat. People aren't going to go to the doctor who smokes. They're not going to go to the poor financial planner. And they're not going to go to you if you're not living your message. Because what you say when you walk into the room speaks louder than anything that you would say that would come out of your mouth. He goes, you're not living this. He goes, so you're going to phony and people aren't going to take you serious. And that day completely changed my life because then I started to, I agreed with what he was saying, right? And most people won't just straight up give it to you like that because they're going to tiptoe around because they don't want to hurt your feelings. Yeah. Okay. And when he gave it to me straight like that, it changed my life because it's true. It's true. People may not ever tell you, but they're going to follow more of what you do than what you say. And that day I went on a path, went from 240 in a 44 inch waist, where today I weighed in this morning at 178, you know, and at 41 years old and the best shape of my life. And it's simply because of one reason. People ask me why I do these runs and things like that. And it's because I want to live what I'm teaching. And I don't want anyone to look at me and say, that guy doesn't practice what he preaches. That's a slap in the face.
And how important during these times, and what a great message to coaches, because we all should be not only trying to be in the best shape possible, like you said, health reasons,
yes,
but even now during this coronavirus, the downturn, what's the talk you're giving to players and coaches during this time? You know, how to prepare themselves, how to maintain themselves mentally more than anything.
Yeah. I mean, there's a link. If you go to briankane.com and click on articles, I put a video in there that talks about how we should be coaching people through the corona season.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a ton of great feedback in there. I'll give you kind of the cliff notes of it. And I would link to that hopefully in our show notes. But the first thing is, it comes back to, and people always ask, hey, what's the number one thing you took out of Ken Rabizza? And the number one thing would be the same thing I would use with this time during corona season, which is control what you can control. And we can't control the future. We can't control the past. We can't control the government, but we can control what we do every day. Mm-hmm. And we can control if we're taking a mentality of I'm the victim or I'm going to be the victor. We can control if we take the mentality of focusing on what if. And Peter, the what if game has no finish line. You can play what if until you're blue in the face and dead in the grave. You have to focus on the what is game. And the what is game is do the best you can with what you have in the current situation and make it a season. I'm saying to coaches, don't think about the finish line of Corona. Think about what you're doing today to be a little bit better today than you were yesterday and a little bit better tomorrow than you are today.
And one of those things I would assume inside the mental game would be, because you hear this a lot, and I'm a big follower of this, you got to break bad habits. You got to create better habits. That takes time. You got to do it a step at a time. Am I going in the right direction there?
Well, 1,000%. And it's funny. One of the best things that's happened for me coming out of Corona season is an app that I use on my phone. I'm going to send you a video you can use in the show notes. It's called Way of Life. And Way of Life is essentially a habit tracker. And you literally put down the things that you want to do every day. So one of the things I have on there is call success hotline, which another one of my mentors, Dr. Rob Gilbert, leaves a 3-minute message every day you call and listen. And it's good mental game every day. Mm-hmm. Another one of my things I'm tracking is, you know, did I spend quality time with my wife? Another one is, did I work out today? Another one is, did I make a social media post today? So all the things that I want to do as part of my process to have a successful day or a successful week, I put inside of my Way of Life app and then I track it. Because Peter, I talk a lot about what I call the 4-step goal formula. And the 4-step goal formula works for anything that you want to accomplish. And step one is you set your intention. What are you trying to do? Step two is you schedule it. When are you going to do it? Step three is you measure it. Are you making progress towards what you want to do? And then step four is what I call R&R, reflect and refocus. And the best process for reflecting and refocusing during Corona season is the same process I use with major league pitchers and my college pitching clients after they have a start. And that process to reflect and refocus is called Well, Better, How. So you look back at your start or you look back at your week during Corona season and you say, what did I do well? What do I want to do better moving forward? How am I going to do it? So the pitchers I work with after start the next day, they will send me like the analytics of their start and say, here's what I did well. Here's what I want to do better. Here's how I'm going to do it. My coaching clients I work with now during Corona season, let's say Todd Whitting at the University of Houston, is he will send me a text message every Monday with a screenshot of his Way of Life and say, Kaner, here's what I did well. Here's what I want to do better. Here's how I'm going to do it. And what that does is it just refocuses you to continue to make progress towards that best version of you for yourself or for your program.
You know, Brian, I know in a short period, and we're not going to cover everything when it comes to the mental game, but let's just take our average coach. Where you've got youth coaches, travel coaches, high school, college, all along the way. Everybody's trying to get better. Everybody's hopefully trying to master the mental game, because it sounds like, you know, the brain is the thing. I mean, if you can master the brain, I would assume you can master a lot of sports. Now, when I understand it a little bit, as a coach, this has got to be applied in your practices. Talk about that a little bit, how you apply it in practice so it's a continual part of your practice organization. Because a lot of times we look at practice as just, let's just work on skills, you know, and get ready for the game.
Yeah, Peter, great question. And I think that's part of the reason why I've had any success that I have had in the mental game of baseball is because of that direct application into practice, right? When I studied under Revisa at Cal State Fullerton, I was at Cal State Fullerton not because I wanted to be a mental game coach. I was there because I wanted to be a pitching coach. So I was learning under him, and then I was on the staff at Cal State Fullerton as a grad assistant with Dave Serrano, George Horton, Rick Vanderhook, Sergio Brown. I mean, a great baseball staff. Chad Baum, who's now at Fullerton JC. And I just fell in love with the mental game. But I went into it wanting to be a coach. So for the listeners, if they go to briankane.com/baseball, I did a free 60-minute masterclass where I actually cover exactly this. And I show you the two things you want to be doing on a daily basis in your baseball program. Number one is called a shadow bullpen. In the shadow bullpen is practicing your process, throwing a bullpen with no ball. You may have seen Instagram clips or ESPN clips of like Clayton Kershaw doing this in Fenway Park.
Absolutely. In the bullpen,
no ball. Yeah. Okay, so same thing. So Kirk Sarlos, who played at Fullerton, played in the big leagues, pitching coach at TCU, he played for you. How about that? Every day, pitchers at TCU do a shadow bullpen. Wow. And what you're doing in the shadow bullpen is you're working on five things. And these five things are critical to pitching. And I hear pitching coaches complain about their players not having these skills, but then I ask them how they practice it and they look at me like I'm cross-eyed. So the five things you're working on in shadow bullpens are: one, body language. Two, your tempo in terms of, you know, how fast you move around the mound. Like, are you throwing a pitch, walking down to the grass, catching the ball, walking back up? Or are you throwing a pitch, backpedaling to the rubber, catching the ball, getting back on, and suffocating the hitter with your tempo? Not your mechanical tempo, but how you move on the mound. That's the second thing. The third thing is your visualization, seeing the catcher, seeing the signs, seeing the pitch that you want to throw. But making it from seeing, as we talk about with mental imagery, to more holistic. See it, feel it, hear it, smell it, taste it, like build in all the senses. The fourth part of shadow bullpens is we're working on our pre-inning, pre-batter, and pre-pitch routine. That's where you would see people take the breath as they come set and then let it rip. And then the fifth thing we're working on is Ken Revizza's, I have to pull this out since since you mentioned the legend, I've got to pull out the toilet.
Oh, yeah.
Where the fifth thing we're working on is our ability to flush it, right?
I love it.
Being able to let go of that pitch and get to the next one. And if your listeners, if they go to briankane.com/baseball, I actually show videos of TCU pitchers doing this, and I walk them through exactly what they're doing. The second thing you want to do in practice every day is in BP around the cage, right? If you go watch most batting practices, here's the shell. You got a guy hitting on the main diamond and you got three guys standing around the cage, posing for baseball cards, leaning on the cage, waiting to hit. Not in programs I work with. There's no time to mess around. So when they come out of the cage and they go to the first base side, there's a green plate. What they're doing at the green or on the first base side would be the red and yellow plate. And what they're doing at the red and yellow plate is they're practicing their release like they would do if they got into red or yellow lights at home plate. Then they go behind the cage and there they're either, you know, ball strike, watching the ball in the zone, calling out what zone it's in, or maybe they're bunting or they're off. And then when they get on the third base side for a right-handed hitter, they're at a green plate. And the green plate is where they're working on their pre-pitch routine, stepping in the box and timing the pitch that they see the BP pitcher throwing. Then they jump in the cage, they do their routine and they go. So they're practicing the process around the cage, which we hit off the cage most of the time every day. Mm-hmm. And they're practicing their process in shadow bullpens. And it takes about 5 minutes, maybe 8 minutes to do a shadow bullpen one inning. Now, where coaches build this into practice is it can be a station during batting practice for your pitchers. Or if you have POs, right, if you have pitchers only, which they do in college here in the States, is at TCU, they do it the best I've seen. Is it the first like 15 minutes of practice, 20 minutes of practice? The position players are doing defensive fundamentals, base running. So they don't need pitchers. So the pitchers are off doing their own thing. Video development with Kirk, or they're doing mental imagery, or they're most likely doing shadow bullpens, then they come together. Now, obviously, if you're a high school coach or you're international coach and don't have POs that are pitchers only, you got to get a little bit more creative. But just think about even during an inter squad where if you're not pitching that day in the inter squad, you go down to the bullpen. And you're basically doing what I would call synchronized pitching. I'm in the bullpen. I'm watching the game. Pitcher throws a ball in the dirt for ball one. I come set, take my breath, and I throw the ball in the dirt for ball one. I catch the ball back. I watch the next pitch. Pitcher hangs a curveball hit for a double. In the bullpen, I hang a curveball hit for a double. So I'm going pitch for pitch with what happens in the game. I'm just getting my mental reps in. And I show all that in the video that's free at briankane.com/baseball.
Love it. You know, and Brian, you know, one of the things I love about this is not only are you working the mental game, it's a lot more fun because it's not boring. And I always say it on the show, and I think I'm right. We've got to get young people to start doing this at the younger levels. We can't wait till they get to college and start training them for this or high school. The younger we can get them, the better, no?
No, 1,000% correct. Because the younger we can get them, one is they have what I would, you know, they would in science they call it less contextual interference. What that means is they got less habits, right? So when I work with some of the best work I see out of my clients is like 8, 9, and 10 year olds. It blows me away all the time, and it shouldn't because I know this, haven't been in education. Is that at that age they're a sponge? They'll do anything. They want to be coached, right? And the older they get, the more ego comes in, the more they think they have answers, the less coachable they can become. But if you get them in that younger age and they learn how to slow themselves down, because everyone says slow the game down, but really you're slowing yourself down, how to focus on process and what they can control, how to breathe and have a routine. If you can get them to do those things at a young age, how much more fun does baseball become for them? so much more fun. How much more better do they perform because they look at failure as a learning opportunity instead of a slam to their ego? And baseball is full of that failure and adversity. So the earlier we can teach them these skills, the more success, and maybe more importantly, the more enjoyment they're going to have out of the game of baseball. And I think part of why here in the States you see so many players getting out of baseball and going to lacrosse is that lacrosse, you move around a lot more. There's not as much failure. Soccer, you move around a lot more. Other parts of the country, the Netherlands, where I've coached for multiple times, is, you know, in the Netherlands, man, you make a mistake in soccer, nobody knows what happened. What the ball keeps going. In baseball, the ball goes through your legs, everyone's looking at you. So unless you have some tools to deal with that type of pressure and adversity, this game can chew you up and spit you out. Not because you're not designed for it, but just because you're not prepared for it. And we never rise to the occasion. We always sink to our training, and that training falls on our coaches.
Now, you talk about flush it. There's many different ways to flush it and different situations. Can you talk about a few of them?
Yeah, I love to always, I love to tie everything to a process. And what I've learned, Peter, probably in, you know, in the two decades of doing this, is if I'm coaching other people to teach this, I have to give them a certain set of steps. That's why in my certification program, there's what I call the 10 pillars of mental performance mastery. When we're looking at a flush process, three steps. Number one, there's a physical action with association. If you watch the Evan Longoria E60, which you should link to in these show notes as well, because Ken's featured in there, he talks about when you undo your batting gloves, undo your batting gloves, right? And he says, when you undo your batting gloves, you're unstrapping that last pitch and strapping on your focus for the next one. You'll see guys clean the batter's box. And as I clean the batter's box, it's a new slate and I'm just starting my app at 0-2. It doesn't matter. So there's a physical action. That's step one. Step two is a deep breath on a focal point, where if I can look at a spot and take a breath, that says to me, I'm in control of myself, and I've got to be in control of myself before I can control my performance. So you'll hear Longoria in the E60 step out of the box, look at the left field foul pole, and undo his gloves. That's step one, gloves. Step two, breath on a foul pole. Step three, which is really hard to evaluate as a coach, is a verbal trigger. And the verbal trigger is something like, so what, next pitch? I got this. Inside, you know, or whatever. It's something that you're saying to yourself to get to the next pitch. It's essentially structured and intentional self-talk to bring you back to the present.
And that's got to be practiced, even in practice. Anything you're doing, you got to consistently practice that. You can't just wait for the ball game and do it.
If there was one message to get to your coaches today, it's practice the process. And that's the shadow bullpen, and that's the work around the cage. If they're doing those two things, then they're getting it.
Brian, we got about 6 minutes. I want to ask you about, you know, the tough part here. One of the hardest parts, you mentioned visualization, okay? And I think we all understand the importance of it. Now, getting younger players to practice that is not easy. Because, you know, even in the old days, coach would tell me, go out, you know, and visualize this while you're at home, while you're sleeping. I know this is not a great question, but how do you get them to do that?
Well, the first thing I always say is, hey, how many of you when you were playing when you were a kid, wiffle ball in the backyard, or when you would go out and you would imagine yourself hitting game 7 home run to win Red Sox versus Yankees growing up in Massachusetts, you know, everyone has done that, right?
Yep.
Everyone's done that. And say, well, why do we stop? The reason why we stop is, you know, we, for whatever reason, they stop and say, well, here's what I want you to do. You got to give them a framework. Because if I just say, hey, Peter, I want you to go visualize, like, you don't, that's not enough information. But if I say, hey, Peter, every time you get in the shower and that water hits your face, I want you to see, feel, and hear what it would be like to hit 5 doubles to opposite field. And then when your head hits the pillow, I want you to see, feel, and hear what it would be like for you to hit 5 doubles into the pole side gap. And just do that. Your shower, in the bed, or you use the toilet. Right? And when you sit on the toilet, that becomes your mental throne. And when you're sitting on the toilet, I want you to visualize yourself hitting 5 home runs or throwing 5 nasty sliders and getting guys to swing and miss. But you have to give them a framework and a context for it, because otherwise it's like incomplete. It's like me saying, hey, Peter, I want you to go for a run. Well, where? How far? How long? How fast? I don't have enough information. So to say the term visualization is like, hey, I want you guys to play catch. Well, what does that mean? I mean, like how far, how long? Long cost, close quarters catch? Like, what do you want me to do, you know? So we got to give them a little bit more info.
And it's better a little less every day and do it every day rather than trying to do a lot in one day and then wait 3 more days.
Oh, here's another key to take away. Do a little a lot, not a lot a little.
Yeah.
Do a little a lot, not a lot a little. You're better off visualizing 5 minutes a day, 7 days a week, than wait until Sunday and doing 40 minutes.
Makes sense. And finally, you know, let's get to this part because I think it's important. Brian Kane, you know, you look everywhere. I mean, you're being interviewed by everybody, but you're also interviewing on your podcast all kinds of people in sports and people that are successful. What's Brian Kane developed lately? You know, because I love telling coaches, you got to be creative. You got to develop your own system sometimes. You can't always take from others, but you got to develop your system too. What's Brian Kane developed lately that can help coaches with the mental game?
Well, you know, and Peter, respectfully, I would say that success leaves clues. And I would say great coaches are good at following the leader. And that's all I've done for a large part of my career is follow the leader and Ken Revisa. And I've read every book that's ever been written on the mental game of baseball. I have to tell you my Harvey Dorfman story at some point. That's one's incredible. You know, Bob Tewksbury, he's a good friend who's now in the Cubs role doing what Ken did. And what I've created, two things. For coaches, I've created what I call the Mental Performance Mastery Coaches Certification, available at briankane.com/certification, where I coach you as a coach how to use the mental game. So for the coaches listening to this, their call to action, right, their thing to do, go to briankane.com/baseball and get that. Then if you want more, check out the certification course because I'm going to walk you through how to coach the 10 pillars of mental performance mastery. If you're an athlete, go to briankane.com and click on the athletes program. And that's where I coach you as an athlete on the 10 pillars of mental performance mastery. So in those two programs, my voice is completely different. I'm speaking to athletes, typically high school age, or I'm speaking to coaches and how to coach this. And the 10 skills of mental performance mastery. And if you think about skills, right? Multiple skills make a skill set. What do we do to develop skills? I do drills. So if I'm doing drills, I develop skills, multiple skills or a skill set. So there's 10 skills that make the skill set of mental performance mastery. And in the certification program and athletes program, I give you the drills. Okay. So those 10 skills, number one, elite mindset. Number two, motivation and commitment. Number three, focus and awareness. Four, self-control and discipline. Five, keeping the process over the outcome. Six, meditation and mental imagery. Seven, routines and habits of excellence. Eight, time management and organization. Nine, leadership. And 10, creating the right culture. And we covered a lot of those today in this podcast, but that's the framework. And if you want to become mentally tough, you have to develop those 10 skills. We're all doing it. We all have 24 hours in a day. We all have focus and awareness and levels of self-control and discipline and you know, motivation and commitment. But are you raising those levels? Are you taking your coaching and your game as an athlete to the next level? Or are you just going by with what you have? That'd be like you never taking batting practice and going to hit in a game and thinking you're going to have success. Never throwing a bullpen, showing up on game day, and let's see what happens. But that's what we do in baseball with mental performance because we don't give it a context of here's the drills to do to develop the skills to make this skill set of being the one pitch warrior and the master of the mental game to give you the best chance for success. And I think that's what my purpose in life is to educate, empower, and energize other people, coaches, to be able to then know the drills, to develop those 10 skills to help create masters of the mental game. So thank you for having me. And hopefully, you know, we're able to get some coaches, some tools and things that they can use to help them take their career to the next level.
Well, I'll tell you what, I was happy that you didn't ask me to repeat those 10 because I would have blown it right away. Listen, Brian, this has been great. Finally, I just wanted to, if you could just end it for us on your one message, because here's the message I got, not just everything I just learned, but the message I also got for coaches is the way you talk to people with stories, with facts, the way you're energized. That's what coaches also need to do with their players.
I would say the message is whatever it is you're trying to teach is caught as much as it's taught. And people are looking at you as a coach. You have the privilege and the opportunity to mold lives, especially at the youth levels. You know, you get into professional baseball, it's different. It's about results. But the only place that results really matter is in professional baseball and maybe high-level Division I college baseball in the Power Five conferences. Everywhere else, it's about development. It's about teaching life through the game. And you don't learn, everyone says baseball mirrors life. It does not. Coaches are teaching life through baseball. Baseball doesn't teach you anything about life. Coaches are the ones that are teaching you about life through baseball. And that's the thing I want people to get is that if you want to be, you're either, as a coach, you're either going to be what I call transactional or transformational. And a transactional coach is you show up, I throw you BP, hit you ground balls, you play a game, you give me wins. Transformational, and this is what Tim Corbin is, This is what Jim Schlossnagel is. This is what Augie was. This is what Skip was. This is what Ken Revisa was. This is what I strive to be. It's what you are, Peter. Is transformational is you show up, you give me your time, and I give you skills that can help feed you for your entire life. And it's a relationship that never dies. And that's what I'm looking to do in our short term that we have here on this planet, is to try to take some of the torch that Ken Revisa has given me and put it inside of others.
All right. Well said. Brian, can't thank you enough, man. That was awesome. Thank you for your time. I know it's very limited, man. Thanks.
Oh, Peter, thank you. And I'm going to send you, I made notes here. I'm going to send you the links to everything that we talked about today. So you can put those in the show notes. And
we're going to have all that in the show notes, how to reach you, the website, Twitter, everything.
Awesome.
You got so many people following you. God bless you, man. Thanks for your time.
Peter, thank you, man. And your energy's got me fired up. So I
don't know about that one. Your energy's pretty good. Folks, that is Brian Cain. I'm Pete Caliendo. Special thanks to Brian Kroc, producer of the Lineup Media Group. Special thanks to everybody in the U.S. and around the world for listening. You make our show. So God bless y'all. We'll see you on the field, you know, pretty soon. I hope everybody be out there playing again. So see you on the next show, everybody. Bye-bye.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm.